I'm Tom Lundquist. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for Optima Health Sentara Health Plans, but I do a lot. We are pretty integrated, a little different than our former speaker laid out, but we are fairly integrated. Some of our teams certainly have straight lines or dotted lines to the enterprise leadership, and some have dotted lines, and we certainly do a lot together. I spend a fair amount of my time actually working with our integrated delivery system, our CIN, Clinically Integrated Network, Sentara Quality Care Network, which has about 3,000 providers. We'll talk about them a little bit today in terms of what we're doing with them. But I also work with other CINs across the state of Virginia and now into other states, as you'll see. So my co-presenter is Brian O'Neill. He's sitting right here in front of me. He'll actually talk about a few of our use cases as well. So this is our agenda, and I'll quickly go past that. Sentara Healthcare over on the right-hand or left-hand side of the slide as you look at it, those are sort of our three pillars of our 2017 plan. Sentara does something funny as we think of 3 to 5 year plans strategically. We name it by the year it starts. So we actually just put our 5 year plan ahead of us, and it's the 2017 strategic plan. And the three key pillars of that are clinical quality and safety, customer centricity, growth and innovation. And certainly the health plan is positioned as a major asset strategically to accomplish these. Especially growth and innovation. And as I looked at this list, I got here a little bit late this morning, I presume this was sort of the early discussion that kind of talked about the things that are important to all of us in the room. And I look at this, and I think we're going to touch on just about everything on here, at least a little bit in this presentation. I won't read through our mission values, but they're there for your looking pleasure. Sentara Healthcare, in case you don't know who we are, this is who we are. I'm not going to spend a lot of time there. And Optima Health, the health plan, 34-year history, about 450,000 members right now spread across commercial and Medicaid primarily. We're down to about 24,000 exchange members. We started with about almost 40,000 in year two. We shrunk by design. We purposely pulled out of 5 markets strategically to sort of right-size the book of business that we had there. And then we have, again, by design, a very small but growing Medicare Advantage plan. And this is, for those of you who know our story, this is our third time in Medicare Advantage. We got in, we got out, we got in, we got out. And now we're in a very integrated fashion. As I got to the health plan almost 4 years ago, we were just getting back in. And it wasn't just Optima sitting at the table trying to figure out how we were going to do it, but rather it was Optima with Sentara Medical Group, Sentara Quality Care Network, and one of our other partners, EVMS, the Medical Schools Physician Network, Sentara Medical Group, and our Sentara leadership, which makes up some of our board, really saying we need to figure this out and we need to do it together. We will fail if we try to do it one piece of the organization alone. We have a very strong provider network as Optima, certainly much larger than the Sentara footprint, and our partnerships are now stretching into other states. So we have 36,000 members under a TPA and an evolving joint venture relationship up in Ohio. And we hope to grow that, obviously, with our partner. And then in Alabama, this slide's probably out of date, we have a Medicaid joint venture product down there with 2 health systems in 2 different big markets. And because of some recent pullouts of a couple vendors, Centene being one of them, we likely are going to look at more like 150 to 200,000 Medicaid members that we'll onboard here come October. And it may grow quickly from there because with their pullout, the state's asking us to contemplate a few other regions. And you'll see that's going to become relevant in just a minute. So, you know, as I got to Optima 4 years ago, you know, not surprising any of us who have the health plans here, the health plans always focus on population health, right? We've said that came up earlier today. So we knew that to be the case. And I was asked early on to really bring the expertise that I had from other places around value-based contracting, and what could we really do meaningfully on that front, and to do it fairly rapidly. That required some infrastructure, certainly, but as of January 1, we have 75,000 of Optima's fully insured membership and some self-insured membership, 5 large employers in particular, including Sentara, but also 4 other fully insured or self-insured books of employer groups. And they are under value-based contracts. Now, some of that started 3 or 4 years ago with a population health management fee. So we had some of the municipalities that we work with, Sentara and a few others, commit to prepaying this journey of population health and value-based contracting. But as of January 1, we launched a shared savings component, and about 50,000 of those 75,000 members are under a shared savings agreement this year. So that's kind of step one of a burning platform, right? How are we going to be successful? Because our belief excuse me. Our belief is that if we're going to do this and we're going to spend all this energy, and it took probably a year and a half to get the contracts fully baked and really get sophisticated models of shared savings methodology ironed out that the physicians could understand, as well as all the finance folks. If we're going to do that, I often say, it's now my job, our job as a health plan, to make the physicians and the CIN successful. I want to pay them millions of dollars in shared savings, right? All of us who have this integrated model should want to pay that shared savings component. It means we're bringing costs down, means we're beating our trend expectations that the actuaries are sending or that are setting, and we're in good shape. So we have the population health management fee, shared savings methodology on the total cost of care, and then a commitment to help the CINs be successful. So what does that mean? I'll get to that. Two other parts of the burning platform. I mentioned Alabama Medicaid. It was awarded in 2014. It was originally supposed to go live in 2016. Legislative bodies being what they are, took their time, wrestled with funding, decided they'd push it back twice, and now we're at October 1, 2017 go live. All indications are we will go live this year in two of the regions that we're in. And they started to put requirements out in 2015, 2016 that we realized pretty quickly we could not solve with our current case management system. In fact, we pushed on them. We said to them, can you do some, we were working with Brian and his team on a couple other use cases, some of which you'll hear about, and we said, we need to take what we're doing over here in Medicare Advantage and apply some of this methodology, some of this platform work in case management tie it into your platform. Initially, they said, we think we can do that. They came back about 2 weeks later and said, we absolutely cannot do that, and we don't think that's even on our horizon. And I remember saying to the senior vice president of sales for that company, I said, that you're telling me that you're okay with us terminating this contract then in the next year or two. And he just sort of shrugged his shoulders and had nothing more to say. So that's the journey we're on right now. So we decided we had to solve for Alabama's requirements differently. And what did that mean? So Alabama had requirements that all physicians in the state of Alabama, most of whom are not integrated in any way, shape, or form, they've never done managed Medicaid, had to have access with their teams to a common case management platform to be able to read a care plan, potentially enter into a care plan, and do that sort of bi-directional information flow with us as a health plan and our case managers, and potentially some community resources we'd want to tie in as well. We actually are live with two components of Alabama Medicaid already. I think we have about 30, 40,000 lives already live, and that's around partners in pregnancy and some home health components. So that sort of went live ahead of schedule. By design. And then the real big burning platform, if we didn't have a burning platform yet, maybe it was just smoldering, MLTSS in the state of Virginia decided to change the rules and the game. We have had Medicaid business, I think it's coming up on 20 years in the state of Virginia, as you saw in the earlier slide, almost 200,000 lives. And they did two things as they got ready to come out to an RFP. The state of Virginia decided to put the managed long-term support and services into managed Medicaid. So previously they were just fee-for-service, direct pay by state. In Virginia, that represents about 200,000 lives and about $5 billion, with a B, $1 million of spend a year. So our anticipation from the early specs of this and then through the RFP was that we'd probably be about one of five vendors, and that's what it's turned out to be. Actually, there's seven. But we'd probably pick up about 15 to 20%, and that's going to be about $750 million to $1 billion worth of top-line revenue of cost to manage. So that significant enough and certainly a big undertaking for us as a couple billion-dollar health plan to contemplate and for Sentara to contemplate. But also, they required in the specs of the RFP some really interesting needs. So, for example, we had to have all care providers, including the community, family, or friends, had to have access to a communication portal and had to seamlessly be able to discuss a case and a care plan and input into that care plan with our case manager or whoever else we deemed was important in this mix. We know, given the size and scope of this, there are not enough Virginia nurses or social workers to meet the staffing requirements that have been set forth in this, so we have to be thinking differently. Virginia currently wants most of these providers to be Virginia licensed. That doesn't add up immediately, so technology's got to help us start to manage by exception and manage differently. And you'll see some examples of how we're doing that. And then they had things that were very simple, like in the RFP for the presentations we had to go to, they gave us a scenario for about 2 weeks' notice, and they said, here's the scenario. You've got to be able to show how your system will accommodate this. And one of the scenarios was in a small community, a pastor is part of the care plan, and how will you have a meaningful input capture for a pastor to be able to weigh in on the status of their member of their church. And we were able to demonstrate in that 2 weeks, we took that scenario. We were already doing a lot of work with the performance clinical team. They are strategic as well as tactical for us, and you'll hear that theme, I think, a couple times today. Very quickly, we were able to take what we had already been working on, create a demo that was able to show a live demo of how a pastor would enter a screen, have certain questions to answer that would be reliable and queryable, and could actually feed then into a hierarchy of something that needs to be bumped to a nurse, or no, everything's okay, status quo. So obviously something pretty significant, and what I basically said at this point, we had some key decisions to make as we were going down this path, and if we didn't have a tactical and strategic partner in our toolbox with Performance Clinical, I would have probably been a no vote to say we should not pursue MLTSS. As big and as significant as that is, the risk would have been too great for us not to be able to tackle that with our existing legacy vendors. So we all know that as we reach, you know, as we face burning platforms, there are challenges in any of our businesses. And I laid out a few of these here. I don't think there'll be any surprises to the group in this room. But I would say that legacy in some of this, you know, I get a little bit pushed back when I present things like this and concepts like this, but I say these things at Sentara. We have a lot of good enterprise-wide groups that think about this. But legacy vendors represent a huge organizational investment, no surprise there, right? But the fact that that's the case, I think EMR systems in particular, makes everybody want to solve for every problem with the EMR vendor. The re-engineering of a legacy system, whether it be a case management system at a health plan that we've had for a number of years or an EMR, is pretty significant and not always possible. The electronic medical records do not always address what needs to be done with current requirements. We've heard from the last couple speakers, things are changing. The Medicaid world is changing. Virginia Medicaid, in order to force vendors or in order to force companies like us to go into managed long-term services and support, they took out of traditional Medicaid the age, blind, and disabled, which had been part of that in Virginia. And that was actually, if we managed them well, that was actually a kind of a gem within the Medicaid element. So to take that out sort of forced our hand to say either we're going to lose $500,000 worth of top-line revenue or we need to sort of go after MLTSS. And then on the heels of MLTSS, they are, for the first time in about 15 years, putting the entire book of business of Medicaid back into an RFP that'll come out here any day, literally. So we'll be bidding on that as well. Legacy vendors often create barriers to effective bi-directional data sharing. The story I told is we kind of approached our vendor, our current case management vendor, and said, this is what we need to accomplish, and they really had no solution for us. It was incredibly disappointing, but it actually, in the grand scheme of things, allowed us to say, okay, we've really got to solve for this in a new way, and that's the journey we went on. And then the other, I think, the biggest challenge we have, and this is probably not unique, I'm a big proponent of physician leadership, physician executives, believe in pushing that envelope. It doesn't always move as fast as you need it to, and you all know that as well. But I put that up there because it's key, though. We have to have that capability. Success factors at Sentara, as I looked at these monumental challenges, you know, people often ask me, am I happy at Sentara? And for a lot of the reasons that are on this slide, I say I absolutely am happy at Sentara. I love where I am, and the reason is because we've got some really great success factor leadership. Our senior leadership, all the way to the top of the enterprise, across the health plan, across the health plan, the hospitals, is very much present, very accessible. We work as a very large matrix team. We've got significant resources that have been dedicated to this effort: subject matter experts, leaderships, analytics, and technology. I presented about 2 years ago, I think it was. I think we were right on the heels of just getting an $18 million investment in multiple analytics platforms, which I'll touch on very briefly. We are fully in production on all those platforms, I'm happy to report, and doing some really great work. Staffing productivity or nursing leadership is driving the re-engineering effort. What I mean by that is our CNO, I got involved 4 years ago in care transitions across the continuum, so where we have patients that are shared between Sentara and Optima and Sentara Medical Group, you know, it should be easy, right? We should have perfect, seamless integration of our patients across those entities. We don't, right? I don't know if anybody solved for that quite yet, but we're making progress. But what really happened over the last few years is it boiled up to where the chief nursing officer of Sentara, Jean Marie McGee, some of you may know her, myself and a few others got sort of put finally at the head of this, and were asked to work together to solve for this. Jean Marie has taken a lion's share of the effort, first thinking about the integration of the hospital care managers with the system care managers and with our Optima care managers. But nonetheless, that's, I think, critically important as we think about care transitions. But nurses aren't the biggest part of the solution. As John mentioned earlier, and I would agree, it's social workers. When we start thinking about this business outside and we think about really doing care integration well and care coordination well, the physicians and nurses are critically important. But I'm going to submit that probably more than 80% of this work is going to be done by social workers and down. And we've got to create ways to have new healthcare workers coming into the bottom of the pile to be able to manage and touch patients. And as they do that, allow the systems to help us sort who needs to then be touched by the higher level licensed personnel. Productivity is critical. I learned this lesson. So I don't know how many of you have worked with multiple vendors or how many of you have been in a couple different settings in the last 10 years of your career. I've been in at least three in the last 10 years, we'll say that. And I have one vendor that I can count that I have actually worked with very closely in all three of those settings, and that was from a national health plan, a hospital-based ACO, and now Sentara, and that's the group that's presenting with me today. So again, tactical and strategic, they've helped solve for problems I never imagined. If you had asked me even 2 years ago, would I be up here telling you that we are starting to think about reengineering our entire case management system around a nimble mobile platform, I probably would have said no. But my nurses came to me right around that time and actually given some work we had done with PCS, they started to say, I think we could actually rebuild and reengineer our whole system. And thank God they did for the reasons I've already mentioned, because if we hadn't been down this road already, we may have had to pass up on a pretty big slice of business that was coming. And then the productivity, as we put people into these new workflows, one of the things I learned in my days in Tennessee was that not all systems of clinical workflow management are equal. In fact, when I saw a threefold difference of how much efficiency and how many patients per day a nurse could touch with the right system versus an old legacy system, that was pretty important information. And I've carried that with me. And that's why I've worked with Brian and his team the last 3 years, or last three settings. Because, again, Virginia does not have enough licensed nurses to meet the requirements. I've got to force this work into the hands of other personnel. And therefore, in order to do that, I've got to have a platform I can trust, and I can show the productivity, increase the productivity of those nurses who are working on it, but also bring others through that platform. So we have some metrics, some early metrics that we'll share today and how we're doing that. And I'm passionate about workflows, passionate about making sure that we create a consistent approach. It goes back to a question I was asked about 8 years ago when we had hired about, I think it was about 40 nurses working across multiple practices when I was at Tennessee Blues. And some detractors of the whole medical home support effort within the organization came to me and said, how do we know what they're doing? We're paying for these resources. Prove to me they're doing the work for us and tell me how many patients they're touching. And we were able to kind of get to some of that answer with PCS because it tracks exactly how many patients are they seeing a day, and if there's 100 questions we want them to ask, how many of those 100 questions have they asked, and then when did they stop, when did they go off script, how long did it take them to do that? So it gives us really good productivity metrics. From the provider perspective, as we think about if I put my enterprise hat on and I go work with my clinically integrated networks, whether it be Sequent or the other two that I'm working with in the state that are non-Sentara, they worry about all these things. Data aggregation, identity management. We have good analytics that are going to kick out prescriptive and predictive analytics, tell us which patients we think need to be touched. How do we put those into disease registries and workflows that the nurses can then touch so we have no drop balls? Best practice, clinics performance metrics, if we're going to look at gaps in care or gaps in quality metrics, right? How do we queue that up so that the teams in the office settings are doing that work and that it's not my teams having to chase that down every day? Physician reporting peer group, web-based access. So all these things I believe we have to solve for to help the CINs be successful. If the CIN has some of these things, great. Then our system should be able to take their output and load it into a queue and help them with their workflow management if they need it. Or at the very least, their system needs to work with ours and sort of make sure that the nurses, when they're touching patients, aren't duplicating work or worse, missing the touch of a patient entirely. So this slide, just to remind us, when I stood up here 2 years ago, I looked at the world in a couple different ways around population health management and success. We need to have predictive analytics. We need to identify those high risks. So we have that. We've shifted from one vendor to another vendor because it kind of came for free with some broader analytics. We need to have physician stratification reporting. So the key to success in our total cost of care contracts is helping the physician see where they vary in their care and how that relates to actual costs that they can drive out of the system. So Cave Consulting is our physician stratification engine. They do some great work at a physician-to-physician level of helping the physicians understand how they look compared to their peers, grades them, gives them efficiency scores, effectiveness scores on quality as it's driven from claims. It's a powerful driver. As I said, I've had so much fun the last 9 months sitting down with physicians since we've gone live, sharing this data with them. Occasionally, they go through the five stages of denial and kind of dying, right? As if they were denial, anger, right? But most of the time, they just get excited about having this in hand, and they start talking to one another quickly about who's doing better, and they want to do that too. So that drives the cost element. Care manager workflow is what we're talking about. And then lastly, just to remind you, this need for a global budget value-based contracting modeling. I learned when I was in the Blues, all the Blues, at least then, I don't mean to pick on my own employer, I learned a lot there, but all of us were sort of doing value-based contract on the side in Excel spreadsheets. We weren't thinking about it systematically and how we would scale it. And I've heard from a number of folks that that's mostly still true. But I would argue that if we're going to do this as health system-owned health plans, and we're going to do it for multiple CINs, like we have now embarked upon. We have three large CINs that we're doing value-based contracts. We've got to have a way to show their budget, their total cost of care expectations for next year, sort of show them the checkbook ledger, if you will, and then on a monthly basis be showing them how they're doing against that trend expectation, broken down by inpatient, outpatient, right, all the things we look at as health plans. So we've got a system in place with EdAffects that allows us to sort of do that with the CINs, and we're about to turn on the first views of that at the end of the second quarter for 2017. So with that, we're going to shift gears. I'm going to turn over to Brian. He's going to tell you about a few of the things that we've done together as we've started to lead up. But I think as he's getting his mic ready, the important part of this is these cases that he's going to share with you led to my nurses coming to my office about 2 years ago and saying, we think we can re-engineer and move our entire case management system over to a new platform that will allow us to have a whole different level of connectivity with community providers, and how important that was, as I told you, the story of MLTSS in particular, saying we've got to add people to the care team we never even thought about 2 years ago. If we thought about them, we really didn't think we had to open up our care management systems for them. So, Brian?
There we go. Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay. So, thank you, Tom. And thank you for the invitation to come here to share the work we've done together with Tom and his team at Optima over the last 3 years or so. Normally, this would be our chief scientist is taking a very much needed break somewhere up in the Rockies at the moment, probably hanging off of a cliff. But hopefully, he'll come back in one piece. But I'm very happy to be here to share our work with you all. And just want to show a few slides about the specifics. So, you know, from getting away from the conceptual and into what we actually have been doing and some of the metrics that we've been tracking along with that. And as we look at the work that we've done together with Tom, you know, I think the one thing or the two things that have been critical to help them get off that burning platform have really been, first of all, giving them the agility to pursue new business opportunities and new value-based models, and very importantly, doing that very quickly, getting it up and operational. Because the concept of developing the model is one task, but actually getting it to work in the environment is quite something else. The second is that the workflow engine in the system itself really drives efficiency into the patient engagement process. So in each of these cases, or particularly in the last two cases we'll talk about here, it really weaves together a multidisciplinary team into a unified unit focusing on the patient. And there's two things about that. One is it enables these folks to work at their top of license. And secondly, it allows this management by exception. Two critical characteristics of any really efficient patient-facing model. So in terms of the what we've done in terms of to move them further closer to their strategic goals, we're going to talk about three different cases here. The Medicare Advantage assessments is the first use case. That was the first thing we actually had done with them, and I think Tom had made a reference to that. Then the health home down in Alabama, and then MLTSS, this most recent development here in Virginia. There we go. So first, before I jump into that, let me do one slide, quick one, to just explain really who PCS is. So we're really a software service company delivering really a very nimble platform that's cloud-based, and it's called Symphony. And it essentially delivers a workflow engine which simplifies and optimizes patient engagement. And we'll talk quite a bit about what exactly we mean by all that in a moment. We're based in San Francisco. We have a good presence in Boston as well as in Dallas. We've been in production since 2009. And the core of what's different inside of us, and a lot of what Dr. Johnson's work was back when he was at Stanford, is around this workflow rendering engine, which is assembling very specific pieces needed for that particular role, who's ever using the system at that moment, whether it's an RN, a physician, an LPN, a non-clinician, whoever is using it is going to have a different experience that's very much specific to their role, to the patient they're encountering, to the encounter itself. What type of encounter is it? And what sort of payer contract is that patient under? So these are very important aspects because it's all about simplicity, presenting the least amount of information to the user to get their job done quickly and effectively. And that's not a very common thing, as many of us know, in healthcare systems. And so we target at-risk healthcare organizations for all the obvious reasons, but we have customers on the health plan side as well as on the health system side. And the main users of our system are really focused on RNs and the RN support, their support teams. But we have physicians and, of course, patients are becoming more and more a component of this picture. So let's talk about the first use case. We were just really getting involved with Tom back in, I think this was in 2014, I think. And the nurses were exploring and just looking at the system and trying to arrive at some sort of a sense of how this might be useful to them. But in terms of the MA program itself, this was their third time in. I think Tom talked about a lot of this. It was a very narrow network, very focused and very closely collaborative with the physicians that were involved there, which made it interesting as well. And so the issue was that in 2014, they were doing assessments on the Medicare Advantage population. And it was done by the RNs. These highly skilled, highly paid RNs were doing the work. And they had a support staff, a very much less costly support staff available to them. But the support staff, although they'd been trained on the previous system, it was so complex they couldn't use it. So the RNs were having to use this complex care management system to do really basic assessments and screenings for these individuals. And it was very difficult because they had such a significant load elsewhere. So as a result, they got about 30% coverage on the population, which was just really not acceptable. The risk was increased for the organization. So what the nursing team ended up doing is they approached us together with Tom to see if we could potentially help them address this problem. And the interesting thing is that as they were, as they were pulling this all together, they were really seemed very motivated about the 2015 year, and we discovered that the senior management had allocated some bonuses specifically for them to meet the criteria of 60%. They wanted 60% of that population assessed within 90 days of the start of the year, and it's amazing how personal incentives can really drive creative thinking. But they really jumped into it, and it was very exciting because as soon as they ended up getting involved with the system, we trained they were called patient service coordinators. We trained those patient service coordinators. It took 1 hour of training, as opposed to the previous system, which took a full week of training, and they still couldn't figure out how to use it properly. It was 1 hour of training, and they achieved, within a few weeks, they got to the 60% goal. And you can say, well, they was just doing whatever they were doing before, they were doing it faster. Well, that's true. They were doing their assessments now in half the time. Instead of 20 minutes, it took them just under 10 minutes to do individual assessments. But what was really interesting is this became a catalyst for rethinking the workflow completely. So what they ended up doing is they said, well, why don't we approach the patients directly, let them do self-assessments by paper, and we can have the lower-cost staff enter it into the system because they can access the system. Well, the overall impact was a 90% reduction. And so the reason this was an interesting example and a good example is because it's not so much just making people do what they're currently doing faster. It's about leveraging technology to change the way you do things. And that was a great example of that. And on top of it all, the staff was very excited about the new system. So let's jump to another case, in some ways a much more complex one. This is the Alabama Medicaid work that we're doing with Tom and his team. And I think Tom's pretty much laid this all out. It was a joint venture partnership with the delivery systems down there. But it really required pretty sophisticated multidisciplinary care planning and engagement with the patients in and out of their homes. And the existing systems, as Tom pointed out, weren't going to be able to do that. So the existing systems, and actually Tom went into some detail on this, so I won't repeat that, but the existing systems were unable to do many aspects of this particular contract. And part of the trick is each of these contracts is so different. The MLTSS in Virginia versus the one down in Alabama, they all have different nuances in terms of how many phone calls versus how many visits versus how many letters and how many times you're supposed to do that, and what's the timing for each of them. So configuring the rules and setting that all up can be very complicated. So in this particular case, they called on PCS. They called on us to get involved in this, and the impact was very rapid. We've been up and running there since January of 2016 on maternity, and we got up and running on health home earlier this year. But the redesign of the workflows down there had a dramatic impact on how they worked. And these folks were already engaging the population in much more of a fee-for-service type of structure. But an example of some of the problems that a different technology solved for them is some of the paperwork that was still in place, trying to deal with paperwork with existing systems because the existing systems weren't addressing this. 15 different consent forms were required for some of the maternity patients, which now became just 15 checkboxes, all fully documented electronically, and with gating logic that allows them to, if they are missing one of those, have an action that will make sure that gets addressed. Also, so in terms of resource efficiency, the impact was pretty much 50%. So the managers down there are now acknowledging that they basically can carry twice the caseload that they were able to carry before. And that was on a previous system that was web-based, actually, that they were using down there. So it's very significant how you approach the problem of engaging patients and what the particular workflows are that you use and how you get them implemented. So a third use case is this MLTSS. And again, Tom, I think, talked to most of this. It was very, very big opportunity for Optima. And it came at a very short time frame for us. I think we got a phone call about 4 weeks before they had to go in front of the state. And they wanted to see if we could put something together, essentially a model system. And this was a pretty big deal for Optima. So within that four-week time period, we put in assessments, we put in workflows, we put in a lot of the logic that was necessary to specifically emulate what was going to be placed into Virginia, which was quite a bit different, a lot of similarities, but more actually it was more strenuous than what they were doing in Alabama. They had more experience with their community care coordination work up in Virginia prior to that. So what happened? Well, after 4 weeks, they went into their orals with in the demonstration with Virginia, and came out, I think, smiling, generally speaking, and it was it was accurate because they in the end won the business, which was a big deal, and now we're in a phase. We're already up with a full system. We're going live here on August 1st for the first population. So the main message here is that first point. What I was making earlier on is that it's the agility to go after business, to know that you've got something that will get you to where you need to be, and that in the end will end up providing you efficiencies in any case. So what are we doing now? We're migrating all of the populations now. There's probably another three or four: Virginia Medicaid, the commercial, Ohio, and there's a number of subpopulations over onto our system. And we're also doing work with a CIN up in north of Optima in Northern Virginia, or I guess, what is that part of Virginia called?
Richmond?
No, it's the...
The peninsula.
Yeah, the peninsula.
On the other side of the Chesapeake. Yeah.
And that's going to be... This is actually one of the ways we started, and we are now actually moving in this direction because the system actually has the DNA of providers. The two founders, one of whom is sitting here, Jeremy and Chris, are both physicians. And so the DNA in the system is very, very provider-oriented. It's a highly clinical system. So we're going to be moving into the provider side, pulling together, working with Tom and their team over at Optima to initially work on care gaps and then moving on to richer care management as the providers are learning about how to do this. And then, of course, we're doing some very interesting work using some AI tools to try to extend the efficiency beyond where it is now. So being able to deal with patients with a click so that the particular care manager is essentially routing certain patients the necessary interaction that they need without having to pick up the phone and actually interact with them live. Lots of experimentation can go on, and we really see our platform as being that beginning for that sort of efficiency.
So I think, as Brian laid out some of the use cases, you could hear their nimbleness to respond to challenges we had. And so the backstory of that gets back to those early slides about legacy systems and, why did I have to put Brian in those positions? Brian and I strategically have been trying to figure out, how do I get him in as a tactical, strategic catalyst, for lack of a better term. I often use that term. When I first introduced Performance Clinical to my nurses, they had just come off. They were about a year after making a decision on the case management system they had just gone through putting in. So they'd already made a transition. The last thing they wanted to see was anything that was going to talk about nursing workflows. And they literally, if any of you know Pat Curtis, who's been with Optima and Sentara a long time, literally rolling her eyes in front of her new boss, me, like, why are you making me sit here? And that was okay, though, because when they saw what it could do, you could see their wheels turning at the end of that first hour. And then we sort of put Brian on the back burner. So I'm not saying we have to do anything with him. I just believe these are an important tactical catalyst. And then the use cases that he came up, they largely came to me saying, we don't know what to do. And I would say, did you talk to Brian, the PCS team? They said, can we? And I said, yes, please do. And they would quickly come out of those meetings saying, he thinks we have a solution. Can we come up with a few? And it was, some of these use cases were relatively small dollars to sort of solve for at first. But it led to bigger and bigger things. So as we did that, that was important. So the key messages we wanted to sort of leave with you today are that it's really critical, as Brian just said, as we think about new business opportunities, but even current business, the world is evolving. Medicaid is changing. And if it's not changing because of an RFP like it is in our case, the requirements are changing, and your states will probably change too if they haven't already started doing so. New opportunities like MLTSS and the duals are mentioned are coming our way, and how can we be prepared for those? The big, big nationals already, they think they have tools. They can tell this story. I'm not convinced they have tools that are this nimble, but they tell the story well. So I think we all need to have that same ability. So we have to have an effective partnership. We have to be tactical as well as strategic, and I've talked about those. One of the things I love about, Brian mentioned Chris Johnson. Chris is one of the few vendors that I'll leave in a room completely by himself with my teams, right? Because sometimes that's dangerous, right? But you know, Chris and the team at PCS, they'll sit down, and what I know is going to happen is they're going to go through a workflow, and they're going to come out with a more efficient workflow. And he has a great way to work with the teams to get them to challenge themselves about why they do what they do and how they do it. And a lot of times, part of the answer is, well, the system makes us do it this way, right? And they can rethink it and really change the whole way we do it. We solve for new challenges. The fourth from the bottom, solving for the economic strain of patient engagement at scale. You know, we talked to a number of speakers have mentioned this. There's not enough nurses. There's not enough physicians to do this. We've got to change the ratios as health system-owned health plans, I believe. You know, when I talk to physicians, executives, and some of you are in the room, if you really think about what the future of primary care looks like, you know, the old model of 2,500 to 3,500 patients per doc, that's got to change. Not because the docs work harder, but it's a team-based approach to care. The case management models of so many, you know, patients per nurse has to change. Alabama, the nurses, you know, sheepishly kind of told us that their ratios had changed. They could take on more patients. And that was great because we couldn't hire enough people to fill all the slots we knew we needed under the old ways of doing business. So to radically change the way we do work, and then Brian mentioned the last slide, the AI, starting to experiment with not just interactive voice recognition phone calls, but actual AI vendors that are sort of getting kind of intelligent electronic outreach in the right settings and be able to have that blast out more information, touch more patients, and then feed back to the system those that now need a warm handoff. It's incredibly powerful. So as we think about that, it'll allow us to reach out to tens of thousands of patients literally almost simultaneously. We've got to be careful how much you do it because you have to make sure you have the warm body staff to take it on when you know it's going to come back in. Allowing their, people to work at the top of their license, introduction of new technology-assisted outreach I've talked about, and then really just bringing to the CINs the next solution. We've not only with Sequin, but we've brought to two of the other CINs we're working with. We just introduced this as a tool in our toolbox. And we share with them what we're doing with our case management system, how we're evolving it. By the end of this year, we could have any of their staff on board. It's a patient-centric pricing model. So adding additional users, other than some implementation costs, which are fairly nominal in the grand scheme of things, we can actually have as many caregivers per patient that we want to in this platform. So that's also very appealing to me as a provider. So, you know, this is a fun journey that we're on. We're kind of turning the tables upside down. We think we're pretty ahead of the curve on what we're building. We're at the beginning of that journey, so we'll keep you posted. Quote, which we kind of talked about. I think that came from me. I think Brian stuck that one in there. You know, I often say we have to solve for, you know, yesterday's problems today. And when we talk, when I talk with the system IT teams and a lot of us, you know, we're an Epic shop. We've got a lot of dollars invested in Epic at Sentara. And it's got a lot of great promise. Epic's story around a healthy planet has really gotten pretty sophisticated. I like what they're saying. And I am actually a proponent, and Brian knows this, to do as much as we can with Epic. And I do believe they will be part of our case management system for those patients that we share with the health system. But when I just look at Sequin, I've got 38 other EMRs that the Sequin doctors bring to the table across hundreds of practices that they're trying to coordinate, and I've got to work with as a huge lever. Healthy Planet may eventually solve for that, but I have to solve for that yesterday. So again, I think it's about having the right tools in our toolbox. We're on a fun journey. We wanted to share that with you. That's what we were asked to do. Happy to take any questions.
Questions for Tom or Brian? Or reactions to what you've heard?
Thanks. We're an Epic shop as well, and that has its own set of pitfalls and opportunities, as you say. It strikes me that, and maybe this is yesterday's problem, you've already solved for it, Tom, but standalone portals, the adoption rates and the error rates are usually low and high. I missed that one. But and then the integration into the medical record, so whatever your EHR is, if it is not in front of the physicians in the EHR, it's not going to be acted upon. So how have you solved for those?
Yeah, so when I first met Brian, my boss at Blue Cross had brought them to me. They were looking at ICU-based hospital checklists, and they were looking at providers. And my boss had made a big commitment to bring them to us, to bring to a couple hospitals around patient safety. We could not give it away for some of those reasons, right? Hospitals, this is almost 8 years ago, we're busy doing a lot of other big implementations. I say that because they've evolved with what I needed, right? So I realized I had a tool in my toolbox. I had that medical home problem I needed, and or I had to solve for, and they would help me do that. I think the answer to your question is a couple parts of your question. One is, we as a health plan leading, as some of the previous speakers say, leading population health efforts, have to have a solution that solves for clinical integration. If a CIN comes to us with high-level sophistication and they're doing it and I can hand it off, great. But the reality is, when you look at predictive models, we know that we're only touching 5%, maybe 10%. The next 10% is still there, right? So if I can hand off all my case management to a CIN and they can handle the 10% that I normally do, then I want my nurses to do the next 10%. So the system allows me to do that. I can give them a window. I don't believe the physicians necessarily touch this system, even with the Alabama requirement. Even though I'm supposed to have it, I think what happens is the physician says, nurse or staff, front office staff, please go pull a care plan for that patient, and we'll give them an access point where they can just go in and print out the care plan. They can't enter, perhaps, if it's an administrative staff, right? So it solves for a connectivity point, a window in our system. We can, and I've had this exact conversation with our IT system, with Epic and Sentara, the problem of bidirectional flow is not performance clinical, right? That's the easy part. So we're talking about what do we want to push forward out of PCS and present to Epic to consume, and we'll work through that challenge. And there may be some things we want to pull from Epic ultimately, if Epic will allow it, and bring it over there. But it's not a lot. I'm not trying to recreate another EMR. Absolutely not. I want to stick with clinical workflows and efficiency. So I want the leanest amount of information in that system. The adoption issue, I tell you, I keep bringing them back because every time the nurses and the staff see it that are doing the care work, they love it. And I was not the one who positioned them as the re-engineering of our case management system. I was floored. I'll never forget the day that my three lead nurses came into my office and said, can we talk to you? And we sat around a little table in my office and they said that, and I went, wait a minute. All right, I've only been here 2 years. I don't know if I want to tackle this one, right? But the more we talked it through, the more it made sense. So I don't know. I don't know the end of that. I think, a lot of practices don't have the care management system. You get into Medicaid, going to Alabama, MLTSS. There's a lot of providers that we've not traditionally worked with health plans. I think we're going to have to increasingly do that. And I think we have to have a web-based system. And if it's easy to use and intuitive and can train in an hour and actually be successful, we may be surprised. That's the argument I continue to use to get this funded. And I've got a multi-year commitment, so it's no longer an ongoing battle. But the whole issue of Epic versus, went all the way to the system CEO. I mean, Howard was part of that decision making, and I had to, stand my ground and support and say, this is critically important, and this is why, all the things we laid out here, and they agreed. And at the very least, I actually believe, even if Epic solves for all this stuff and they come to us and shock the heck out of us next year, I still believe I want to run a side-by-side comparison and say, who's more efficient? Because I don't think they're going to win the efficiency story for a while. I find it hard to believe. So, does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, that was great. Thanks.
Anyone else? I had a question while the rest of you are thinking. Tom, have you guys integrated this with your inpatient care management workflow processes?
So no, not yet. So Jean Marie McGee and our nursing team at in inpatient front is looking at the evolution of their case management system, and they're first pushing on Epic. So that's their first piece. There are pieces of Epic that we know won't be available till middle of this year, end of next year, or middle of next year. So they're working through that process. They know we have this sitting off on the side. I also, right now, if Jean Marie called me tomorrow and said I want to do something with PCS, I'd say, not yet. I've got to get MLTSS live. Karen Bray would kill me if I let these guys do anything else than get MLTS off. Not that they don't have the capability, but all hands are on deck right now to be ready for that. But that's a possibility. I think they could solve for that too. I actually believe, if we flip prediction, audacious prediction, in a few years, I believe this is part of our solution for care coordination across our entire system. I often use PCS, it's like a wraparound the EMR. It's just different. It's different functionality. It's not what the EMRs were designed for. It's just a very different functionality that I think does solve for a lot of that. And we're going to be proving that in other states, and that's not surprising to me either. You often solve for problems beyond your home team. And then the home team says, why aren't we using that? Right. I've seen that before, and I expect that will happen here.
Yeah, very informative, Tom. Thank you. Just on the business perspective with Alabama,
So do you hold any risk on those Medicaid lives, or are you?
It'll be full. Yeah, the partnership will be full risk, and we'll have between 50 and 30, 35% risk in the regions
so
that we serve.
It's going to be partnership, and you'll be at risk equal,
yes.
equal to Dallas.
Yes, we believe that's our belief in partnership models. We absolutely want to be at risk at some level, and we expect the health system to be at risk at some level.
How long have you been on Epic, and how long have you been on Healthy Planet?
Healthy Planet's got to be coming to its end. I think it was either a 5-year contract. So this is the fifth year we're on that. Did I say Healthy? Or no, I'm sorry, Healthy Planet. I almost gave away what our case management system. Healthy Planet is just emerging for us. It's really our first year to kind of playing with that on the Epic platform. Epic, we've been on. It's a great question. I should know the answer to that. It's got to be at least 8-10 plus years. Longer than that. Centera was one of the big first kind of big integrated systems that went on their platform. So it's a good journey, long journey. And Healthy Planet, I think there's a couple health systems in the country that are a little ahead of us on the Healthy Planet front. That's their sort of their universe. They're taking it to the, you know, others should be able to access. We do a lot of read-only access. We have MyChart open, but we're going to be exploring how we can try to use that across Sequin and Centera Medical Group and our Centera Quality Care Network with non-owned physicians soon.
Okay.